Thank you. And it's Bailey Odell who's going to do the flag salute. And this is her second time around. This year, she's 10 years old. She's a fourth grade student at Fairgrove Elementary School. And she likes everything about school because she says that if she puts her mind to it, she can do anything. I like that. Bailey likes living on the Central Coast because the beaches are close by. And she would like to study more science in school, and she would like to be a teacher when she graduates from college. Bailey says that she's enjoyed swimming ever since she was 6 months old, and she's accompanied this evening by her parents. I don't see Laura Storm, the principal, here. But if you two parents want to come up and take photos, you know, you don't have to say the flag salute. You can take photos or whatever. And do you want to get us going, Bailey?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So Bailey, come on forward, and we'll get, the chief is going to take a photo of all of us if you all want to gather around here. And you turn around and hold that, and we'll all sort of, there, see, he is there, so go that way. Thank you. And then we have this little present for you. I bet you've used them all up from last year. And if you want to start up there and shake everybody's hand. Thanks. And thank you for doing that for us.
I can tell you've done this before.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bailey. And also, I'd like to mention that Bailey's mom works at Shell Beach Floral, which is one of our very nice Grover Beach retailers. That's where you've seen her before. Thank you very much. Could we have the roll call, please?
Here.
Here. Here.
Here. Here. And I believe we have a closed session announcement from our last meeting on February 18th.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, Council members of the public. Council met on two items in closed session on the 18th of February, first one being existing litigation, Vernon versus City of Grover Beach, the other one, property negotiations with the digital web.
That is all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, unanimous. We'll go with the order of the day. There are no ceremonial items this evening, and so we're coming to public communications, and that's when any member of the public may address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes total on any one item of interest within the jurisdiction of this council. The council will listen to all communications. However, in compliance with the Brown Act, the council cannot act on items not on the agenda. So I'm going to open public communications. Is there anyone who'd like to come forward and speak this evening? Okay, seeing none, we'll bring it back to the council. We'll move to our consent agenda, and these are routine items that are listed on the agenda.
Madam Mayor,
yeah,
we need to do the public hearings first.
Oh, so we do, excuse me. Thank you. No, let's just pass on those. What the heck?
That's too hard.
Sounds like hard work, yeah. Okay, in that case, let me get to the right place on my agenda here. We'll go to the public hearings, and item number one is the Grover Beach Lodge and Conference Center development permit application number 1003. The applicant is Pacifica Companies, and I believe our city manager is going to.
Yes, Madam Mayor. It had been our hope that we were going to be able to recommend going through this public hearing at this point, but we're going to have to recommend a continuation. The discussion between the state and the Coastal Commission isn't quite complete yet. We had made good progress and had hoped that we would be there by now, but it appears that a two-week continuation may be in order. Let me point out what the issue is. The issue is still dealing with the armoring condition. And what it's a matter of is getting the state's policy to line up with language in the local coastal program in a way that's acceptable to both parties. I think everyone's after the same thing, but until we reach that point, I think it would be in the best interest of the project just to continue the item for another 2 weeks.
Is that something we take a voice vote on, or how do we handle that one tonight?
Yes, I think that if the council wishes to follow staff's recommendation as outlined by the city manager, a motion to open the public hearing and then continue it to a date certain, which would be the next council meeting on the 7th.
Okay, thank you. So is there anyone out there tonight who came specifically to speak on the hotel who cannot come back in 2 weeks? No. Okay. In that case, we need a motion.
I'll make that motion.
And I'll second it with a question. So just for our city manager, is the language in the recommendation here basically what's moving forward, or excuse me, in the staff report, what's moving forward through the state, and they just need to bless it? Or are we still, where do we stand on that? Or is that too soon to tell?
Well, in reality, we've taken the state language and sent it along to Coastal Commission. We just received a call late this afternoon. They haven't had time to thoroughly digest it yet. I do think it may need some modification on their end, but the city attorney will be dealing directly with the Coastal Commission's attorney as well as the state's attorney, and hopefully that's why the continuation should resolve in 2 weeks.
Thank you. Okay, is there any other discussion or questions? Okay, so we have a motion by Councilmember Bright and a second by Mayor Pro Tem Lee. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Did you want to
Okay, unanimous.
And, then go ahead and open the public hearing.
Yeah, so we'll open the public hearing.
For the record, this item will be, or has been, by Council's action this evening, continued to March 17th at 6:30 p.m. here in Council Chambers. It will not be re-advertised, or public hearing notice will not be republished.
Okay, thank you. So then we close the public hearing, is that right? Nope, we just leave it. It's open.
Open.
We're open. Okay. So moving to item number 2, that is the introduction and first reading of ordinance amending section 3999 of chapter 16 of article 3 of the Grover Beach Municipal Code, and that is Police Chief and Assistant City Manager Copsey.
Great. Thank you, Madam Mayor, members of the council. You have an opportunity tonight to look at amending one of our ordinances. In 2007, the City Council adopted the ordinance restricting those who have been convicted of sex crimes against children that have a requirement to register as a 290, which is a penal code. 290 is a section similar to, and those that are on Megan's Law, if you're familiar with Megan's Law, to live within 1,000 feet of our established protected areas, which is our parks and schools. Times throughout the state, we felt it more appropriate, staff believes that we should amend our ordinance to be more in line with that of the state law, and that is of the 2,000-foot radius from our protected areas instead of just the 1,000. Just keep in mind, too, that our ordinance still only restricts those sex offenders that have committed crimes against children, those children under 18 years of age. In addition, we felt it necessary to require written permission for the sex registrants to enter a school. That's currently state law, but there's no actual penalties for that. So if we have that in ordinance, we can directly deal with that if there's a violation of that, where somebody shows up to a school when they're not pre-authorized, if you might say. And we have had occasions for that to occur. However, fortunately, they were authorized and they have permission from the school to be there. That, too, is a state law. Just to note, though, that there's been some recent case law on restrictions of the registrants from visiting protected areas, just visiting them. We can't restrict that, so we can't restrict them from visiting our parks. We just can restrict them from living near them. So that has one of the changes has been. Staff is also requesting to add some additional language to the ordinance that clarifies a little bit of the residency grandfathering in, if you might say. So if somebody's currently living and owns a house in Grover Beach, because it's quite a restricted area, that if they do become criminals, and we can't kick them out of their house, take their house away or anything like that. The courts have said we can't do that. So we wanted a little bit of clarification in there that basically says that it does not apply to those who establish this residency before being convicted of the offense requiring registration to Megan's Law. So it better addresses that, and it helps the officers hopefully to be able to have a clear thing there. The other change in minor change in there is that we're requesting that instead of bringing this back every year to council to review our parks, we're suggesting only that this come back when there's a change necessary, because we don't add or take away parks very often. So there's not really a need, hasn't been a need to bring it every year to go through that. So at this point, staff recommends that the city council conduct the public hearing, introduce the ordinance for the first reading by title only, and schedule a second reading and adoption at the next regular meeting of the city council, or provide further direction to staff, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions?
The city attorney also watches. And we will definitely, if there's any changes, whether it's 1 year, 5 years, we would bring it to council if there are any changes need to be done in the case law status. So our preference is, just from staffing, is to have it as needed would be sufficient.
Any questions down here?
None.
Just one, yes. Please. So then if there was another park was designated, or another child care facility was organized somewhere in the city that wasn't within these areas, then you would come back to us?
Absolutely. If we need to add additional protected area, we definitely could do that, and we would. So if there was another child care facility that was actually state approved, and that's a difference. There's a lot of care facilities, right, for children, but they have to be specifically state designated, that we would bring it back immediately if that was designated. But you can see from the map, it probably won't impact too much in the map, because most areas are covered.
Right. Thank you.
And I had one question. If somebody is already living there before they commit the crime, they're allowed to continue to stay even if they don't own the property?
Correct.
Okay. Yes. So to sum up then, what we've got is most of Grover Beach doesn't allow the Megan's Law offenders, sex offenders, to live here, but they can still visit, and we should still be diligent.
Absolutely. Okay. Let me clarify that your previous question. If mm-hmm. a person, say, is on a rental, for example, and they lose that lease because they spent time in custody or in jail, they can't come back.
So okay.
If they own a home and they continue and their family's been there, they can come back to their family.
Okay.
So
what about existing sex offenders? So if there are people right now living in some of those areas, do they have to move?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right. Great, thank you. I'm going to open this for public comment. Is there anybody who wanted to speak on this matter? Okay, seeing none, we'll bring it back to the council for discussion and a motion, or vice versa.
I'll just make a motion for staff's recommendation.
I'll second that.
We have a motion from Council Member Lee and a second from Mayor Pro Tem Bright, and this one is a roll call.
Yes.
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 Yes, that's unanimous. So we're moving now to item number 3, which is a request to continue introduction and first reading of an ordinance amending Article 10, Chapter 3 of the Grover Beach Municipal Code to include regulations for state.
The protocol for that, if council is agreeable with staff's recommendation, is to go ahead and open the public hearing and by motion continue it to date certain, which would be March 17th at 6:30 p.m.
Thank you. So I'm going to do this in the right order tonight, this time. We're going to open the public hearing, and I'll wait and see if we have a motion to continue the item.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Moved by Mayor Pro Tem Lee, seconded by Council Member Bright, and this one is a roll call vote.
It's a voice
no.
vote.
Oh, it's a motion. It was a roll call vote.
Yeah,
it's no longer. Let's
be.
Do it on voice vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, unanimous. We're moving now to the consent agenda, and these are routine items that are scheduled for consideration as a group. The recommendations for each are noted in parentheses. Members of the audience may speak on any items listed on the consent agenda. Is there anyone from the audience who's interested in speaking on any of these? Nope. Okay. Council members or the city attorney or the city manager may request that an item be withdrawn from the consent agenda to allow for full discussions, and items that are withdrawn will be placed and heard at the end of the items previously scheduled on our regular business schedule. Did anyone want to remove any of the – or remove – that's – yeah, withdraw. That's the word I'm looking for. Did anyone want to withdraw any of these this evening?
No, but I would like to make a comment on
okay.
–
item number 8, which is the fire protection assessment.
Six. And I had one question on that, too. So, but I think we can do that now. Let's do that.
Okay. Well, do you want to pull it then?
No, let's just, it's brief,
okay,
isn't it?
I just wanted to make a comment that you all know that the ballots have gone out. I'm sure that you've all received your ballots, and I would encourage you to cast your vote and get your ballots back in. We will be having a special meeting on April the 4th, at which time the League of California Women's Voters, League of Women Voters will conduct the counting the ballots. Then we will have a follow-up meeting on the 18th of April, at which time we will announce the final decision on the ballots cast.
Thank you. And my question was, are there any further public hearings that people can attend or public meetings that people can attend to find out more?
Yes, I believe there are. And if I might, I believe either Patrick or Ricky would have an answer. Do you have an answer to that? I know that there are.
The meeting of the 4th will be.
They should call the fire authority.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And we have.
They're all nodding vigorously.
That
okay.
A lot.
Great.
We've been to an awful lot of civic
yes.
organizations.
Yeah, I know because I was at two of them.
Okay.
And we've had four public. Well, tonight's our fourth public hearing, and I'm going to make the point that there's no one in the audience who wanted to come forward and speak on that tonight. So if there's anyone who's listening, I hope you'll take the initiative and find out what you need to find out to cast your vote.
Okay, with that, then I'll make a motion if you'd like.
Yeah, thank you.
I will move that we approve the consent agenda.
I'll second that.
So moved by Councilmember Nichols, seconded by Mayor Pro Tem Lee. And since this one is a roll call vote, we'll go with a roll call vote for all three.
Yes.
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 Yes. So we have a unanimous. And we're moving now to our regular business. And the first item is item number 7, which is a review of the San Luis Obispo County Flood Control District Zone 3 annual budget. And our Public Works Director, City Engineer Ray, is going to present that this evening.
And before he does that, if I might be so bold to step down because I have a conflict on this.
Please do. And what is your conflict?
I work for the county under the Zone 3 budget where most of my projects reside.
Well, that sounds like a conflict.
Yes. So I shall return.
We will call you when we're done.
Maybe.
Maybe. We want the meeting to go fast.
Thank you for a wonderful introduction. This is the review of the Zone 3 annual budget. I'm going to move through it pretty quickly. The city of Grover Beach receives approximately 36% of its water from Lopez Lake, which is operated by the San Luis Obispo County Flood Control District, Zone 3 in particular. The County Board of Supervisors serves as the governing board for the district, and each member agency has a representative on the Zone 3 Advisory Board. Your representative is Councilmember Bright, and Councilmember Nichols is the alternate. The Advisory Board is responsible for advising the Board of Supervisors regarding the costs and operations of the district. The draft budget for fiscal year 14-15 has a total amount of $7,751,751, oddly enough. The budget's been distributed to the agencies for review, and the city's share of the costs this year is proposed to increase by $3,643. And the total assessment to the city of Grover Beach consists of debt service in the amount of $441,000 and some change, operation and maintenance in the amount of $529,000, non-routine O&M in the amount of $23,000, and capital outlay in the amount of just over $97,000. Unless council has questions about the details, I'll just move to the alternatives, and that alternatives to consider tonight include recommending approval of the Zone 3 fiscal year 14-15 budget. Do not recommend approval of the budget and direct your representative to present comments at the next Zone 3 Advisory Committee meeting, or you could actually choose to take no action on the budget tonight. Staff is recommending that council provide direction to the council's representative to vote in favor of the proposed budget. I'd be happy to answer any questions you have about the budget.
Does anyone have questions of Director Ray?
No.
Yes. Can we take a look at on page 3? We have the second paragraph, and it's pretty much applicable to the under contractor funded reserves under those three, four paragraphs, basically the same question. If you'll note, it says reserves collected and set aside for significant scheduled maintenance, capital cost, and billing stabilization will be separately identified as part of the annual proposed budget and will be incorporated into the annual final budget only after review by the Zone 3 Advisory Committee. So you're asking us to approve the budget, and we don't have all of the information on the budget, and Zone 3 Advisory Committee is going to make these decisions relating to the scheduled maintenance reserves, the capital reserves, the billing stabilization reserves, all of those items. Is that a normal process? I mean, you're asking us to approve a budget, and we don't have all of the information that is eventually going to go in the budget.
Yeah, the issue of the reserves in particular, I think, is a much larger question than the Zone 3 budget itself. As you know, the county has two different sources, or two different reserve accounts. One is the general tax, countywide general tax awards, the items in this budget. In the case with the budget that you have before you this evening, they are advancing some reserve funds to push one project ahead. In particular, that's the addition of the new filtration rack, a sixth filtration rack. And I think the only thing that I understand that's notable about that is that, you know, we haven't typically done that in the past, is to push reserves ahead, but they have identified that that will be repaid over the next few fiscal years. Do I think that understanding the details in the reserve account is critical for understanding the budget itself? No. I do think it's important, however, that the board understand the use of the reserve account. And I think, actually, in the future, I think one of the recommendations from the TAC has always been that we would like a little more clarity on exactly how the reserves are calculated and what explicit uses are allowable for each of the reserve funds. And that's been an ongoing discussion with Zone 3, and not one that's been resolved yet.
Okay. I was not able to locate. Is there a place in the budget where it shows the amount of reserves that are going to be in this budget? I can appreciate you might have a pot that says we've got $6,000 going into the reserve accounts. And out of that, we have three accounts here in which we're going to divide those three, that $6,000 up and put it in each one, and that's what they're going to do at a later date. But do we know the amount of money that's in the total reserve account?
I don't know the total amount in the reserve account. I do know the amount that they're proposing to dedicate toward this fiscal year budget, and that's $145,000.
For the total reserve.
$145,000 of the reserve will be dedicated toward projects identified in this fiscal year.
Okay.
And that in particular is really just the difference in cost on that sixth filtration rack.
But we don't know what the total reserves are.
I don't know off the top of my head. I suspect it actually does say in the budget at some point.
Well, I couldn't find it, but I'm not an expert on budgets. It's not that critical. It was a question I had, and I'm satisfied with your answer. I appreciate the necessity for reserve accounts, and that's fine. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I think it's a good question. The budget is representative on the Technical Advisory Committee.
It's an interesting concept.
Thank you for bringing that up.
Because the Technical Advisory Committee has a wealth of information. They're engineers and have a lot more information than we have. So it goes to the Technical Advisory Committee and then comes down to
Madam Mayor,
that.
Yes. They are included in the budget. They're found on page 9 and 10, if you will. I think one of the reasons as well that I would suggest that you might recommend to Councilmember Bright that who is your voting member that we do need to have more clarification as it results regards to reserves. I think one of the reasons that they delay final decisions on those reserves until after the capital, until after the advisory committee has reviewed it, is simply because this body isn't necessarily approving the budget. It's recommending to direction to your representative, and it's quite possible that at the Zone 3 level there may be other discussions that would impact those reserve amounts until a final decision is made at the Board of Supervisors. So that's why I think it's referenced this way in its document.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. That's all I have, Mayor.
Thanks. That's a good question. Any other questions? No. I have some questions which will probably lead to discussion, and so we can maybe do that after we open the public comment. And one of them was to Councilmember Bright. I know that you've had a conflict in the past with the whole issue of do you take direction from the council as to how you should vote? And I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that now.
Well, regarding this budget, I have no issue with that whatsoever.
So you're comfortable voting with whatever
absolutely.
Direction the council would give?
Yes.
Okay. And are you also willing to provide any direction that we give you to express what our concerns would be?
No doubt. I've already made a note regarding the reserves as
Great.
Well.
Okay, thank you. And then, so now a question to the city attorney. One of the things that's arisen on this kind of an issue is where the council has a representative that goes to a committee.
Well, without commenting on legal advice that was received, you know, by the attorney for that body, because that's the attorney for that body, a representative of this agency, of this council, is the representative from our city. We have a membership seat, and to the extent that the governing body of that agency provides direction for vote, that is direction. Obviously, things can happen at the meeting. There could be a change of situation. Budget could be completely changed in this particular instance. It's unlikely, but it does occur. And part of the process is that whoever sits at that in that seat has the authority to act on behalf of the city. So if something occurs beyond the direction that is given by the council, then that member has the ability to make a decision based upon the circumstances that are surrounding the decision-making process, or abstain because something is inconsistent with the direction that was being provided. But clearly, if council gives their representative a direction on how to vote, I think the expectation is that that's what would take place. And, of course, that's it is not a violation of any law to do so.
So let me ask a follow-up question. One of the reasons it's a dilemma for me is that, as a rule, we want to hear public testimony and we want to have discussion amongst the board members prior to making up our minds as to how we're going to vote. If, however, we're directed by our city to vote a certain way, doesn't that then almost become a Brown Act violation because we're making up our minds prior to having heard public testimony and having had discussion?
It would never be a Brown Act violation, but it would, depending on the nature of the item. Very few of the items that are, for example, a Zone 3 item are a true public hearing where there's a public hearing notice sent out, and it's by law required to have that type of a, like a land use approval, which is where we generally hear that type of a situation, where we hear testimony from all affected parties and then make a decision. But I can understand the tension. There is definitely a conflict. And ultimately the member that sits in that chair and takes the vote does what they feel is right.
Thank you. I wanted to have a little discussion on that because I have to say that one of the things I love about Grover Beach is that we are very tight with our budgets. And Director Ray, thank you to you and the other technical advisory committee members for writing herd on that. And I think that we should express very strongly that we want them to follow the advice of the TAC, the Technical Advisory Committee, and we want explicit uses for the reserves. And was there anything else on that that we should ask our representative to put forward there?
I think the only other thing that would be nice to have would be that in future draft budgets that the capital improvement program, they can boil that down to a single sheet, that you have that as an appendix to the budget. Without it, it's really hard to see projects that are funded over multiple years. You just get to see a snapshot of the current year's budget and a comparison to last year's budget, and you'll see projects that have a total cost, and yet it's not entirely, that total cost is not represented in the budget. So without the capital improvement program as an attachment, you'd sort of be looking for more information. I think having that, and then I think future discussions about clarifying the allowable uses or proposed uses of the capital reserve funds, the contractor-funded capital reserve fund and the county-funded capital reserve fund would be useful.
Thank you for that detail. And Council Member Bright could come speak with you further if she needs more clarification.
Absolutely.
Okay. And I'm really glad you're on top of that because that's a huge loophole and it creates all kinds of opportunities for fraud. So I'm really glad that you're on top of that. And also wanted to commend the Zone 3 because we expressed some concerns a few years ago that we felt they weren't being frugal enough and they did modify their practices and we've been much happier in the last few years. And As Council Member Nichols was discussing, the whole reason that we send a council member is because we want a representative to pay attention and listen. And so I'm happy to trust you to get there and take care of business on our behalf. Is that an amendment to this motion?
I'd be happy to amend my motion to include those three items.
Okay.
And maybe I'll just briefly state it, but it's just those two items.
And did you say the bit about them being an appendix to the budget?
Okay. Capital improvement.
Okay, I missed that. Okay. Okay. So this one was a voice, or this was just
the
consensus,
second needs to agree
it?
To the amendment.
Yeah. Right.
Second concurs.
Okay.
Okay. So I think we have consensus. I suppose we can say all in favor. We're all in favor, so we're good. Okay. And Mayor Pro Tem Lee, if you're out there, you can come back. We're done.
Donna. Can I get, would you mind sending me a copy of that? That'd be swell. Thank you so much.
Swell.
Make sure I get it.
I haven't heard that word in a long time.
Really? With the ocean being as high as it's been, you haven't heard the word swell? Were you out of town this weekend?
No, I was here. I didn't go to the valley this time.
I did. I didn't see the swell. Except on Facebook.
It was pretty swell.
It was amazing. Okay. Yeah, we were glued to Facebook. Yeah.
I could see it from my window. Incredible.
Oh, wow. Wow. Okay. So, Mayor Pro Tem Lee is back, and we are now on to item number 8, which is a presentation regarding city council member roles and responsibilities during an emergency or natural disaster, and we have Police Chief Assistant City Manager Copsey and Commander Peters presenting this one to us. Hello, Commander Peters.
Hello. Good evening, Madam Mayor and members of the council. First, I do want to point out a book that you are receiving now. It's Emergency Management. This was given to us by Council Member Nichols. It has a great article on page, I believe it's 29, regarding elected officials and their roles and responsibilities in emergencies or disasters. So with that brings us to tonight's discussion in reference to your roles and responsibilities in these emergencies and disasters. In April of 2013, myself, Chief Copsey, and Councilmember Nichols attended a FEMA training assignment in Emmitsburg, Maryland, where we went with a large group from San Luis Obispo County, about 70 to 80 people, And we were there to learn about emergency operations centers, disasters, how to respond collectively as a group countywide. And it was a very informative week that we were there. A lot of people were surprised with the outcomes and how well we can coordinate a very major disaster over a large area with one another. So it was very good training, and I do encourage anybody, if you have the opportunity to go, please do so. It was a good time. That brings us over to the Operations Center here in Grover Beach. That EOC is actually in this room. It is set up independently of everything, and there's a bunch of people, tables, and information that goes on. Part of the roles that are played are management. And management is responsible for the overall emergency operations and to provide for coordination of efforts between both public and private entities to help with the speedy recovery from the disaster or the emergency. An additional role is the operations. This is where you get your fire chiefs or commanders and your police chiefs and commanders and your public works director. The operations part is they need to run the day-to-day operations and make sure that everything is going according to the plan that's set out by the EOC director and the city council. So the operations staff gets pretty busy with doing everything that's day-to-day in that emergency operation. The planning and intelligence group, this group of people, they receive a lot of data that comes in from the operations and from the field. They receive information that according to the plan that has been established, they have to take that information in, determine if we're going down the right path, and then share that information with the EOC director. Logistics. This group has a very busy job. Logistics has to find all the materials that are needed. They have to find the personnel. They have to find the equipment that's needed. If we need bulldozers brought in for anything, they need to find all that material. So logistics plays a very important role in trying to help us speed our process through to recovery. Finance and administration, I don't envy these folks. They have probably the hardest job in a disaster. And that's because they need to document every single minute that's going on of somebody's time. Even with volunteers, you would think a volunteer comes in and they don't need to keep a time card or anything like that. However, volunteers do in a disaster role. They have to actually fill out their forms, how much time they were allocated, and where they were doing their service. So finance and administration then has to work through all those forms, make any submissions to federal or state government for any reimbursements, and then they are busy throughout the process of the recovery. Recovery can take many, many years. There are still recovery efforts going on from the Loma Prieta earthquake. So as you can imagine, that's over 20 years ago, and there's still recovery papers as well. As city council members, you'll establish the executive levels of policies for the management of the emergency. You'll work closely with the EOC director and their staff in developing that plan to get through the response and the recovery stages of the disaster and then into the managing the sustained operations. And then you will also attend the briefings that the EOC director will have with you. Other duties will be that to work as a support role and to, as elected officials, you have the folks that you can contact both at the county and the state and federal level and then ask them for assistance. You'll also have to be responsible for being basically a dignitary to the city. And if it is a major disaster, a lot of folks like to come in. You know, you can have the governor coming, you can have the president coming. And obviously your role as the elected officials would be to, you know, help them, show them the area and show them what we need and get the best resources we can. One of the things that we also need to do as a council is that you have to designate your public information officer or the person who's going to be speaking to the media and to the public. Generally, this is the mayor in most cases. However, if the mayor is unavailable for whatever reason, if they're just not present or if they're gone and not unable to return in time for the disaster, then the council would make their designation who would be next in line to give your message out to the public. That message needs to be a unified message. It really does in this critical time. The public is looking to their elected officials for the leadership that will help them make the right choices to help their families get through the process. So in that time, you really do have to get a unified message, and that message, in order to be unified, you should be communicating with the EOC director and their staff, as well as the Emergency Operations Center will have its own public information officer. That way, the message that's going out from everybody is the same, and that the continuity of that message helps the public to gather up what they need in their time. Some of the things that can help you with this process is actually there is training. The training is not required training as it is for city staff. However, FEMA and their quotation is strongly recommends that elected officials attend the training of ICS 100 and ICS 700. ICS 100 is the Incident Command System. It basically will show you the overview of how the Emergency Operations Centers operate and what is to be expected through the local EOC to the regional and to the ops area and so forth, all the way up to the federal level. Like I said, FEMA does not strongly recommends it, doesn't require it. However, it does help when we go to get recovery funds that we can show everybody has attended the training. Again, ICS 700, elected officials, as it is mandated to attend by management officials. And then one of the things that you can really do that we all should do is a family plan. The family plan is the preparation, and a good website is www.ready.gov. It's a federal website. But if you have a good family plan in place, then when the time of a disaster strikes, you will know what to do and your family will know what to do. Such things could be just writing down your contacts. Everybody is dependent on cell phones nowadays, but if your cell phone goes dead or if it gets damaged, how are you going to look up those many numbers that you have in the phone if you don't have them written down? Other thing is establishing a place to meet. That could be a relative's house, either out of state or out of county. It could be a friend's house. And then you also want to subscribe to any text alerts. Right now there are several organizations that offer text alerts, but the best one is through Cal OES, and they're offering some alerts that whenever there's earthquakes or other disasters in the area, you will get an alert message. And then you also want to have your first aid kits, your food, your water. They say for 3 days. I have a setup for 10 days because Hurricane Katrina showed that 3 days wasn't sufficient enough. So if you want, ready.gov has a lot of good information on there. In preparation for our upcoming exercises, we do invite you folks from the council as well as anybody else from city staff would like to attend. On April 16th of this year, we will be hosting a nuclear power plant exercise. It'll be here in this room. We will have a full EOC operation as well as our command post, which is out front in the parking lot. That'll be in the field in operation in addition to our sergeant's vehicle, which has a smaller version of a command post, will also be in operation. So police department-wise, we will have all of our tools out there and giving them a good test. So the EOC will be in full operation. You're welcome to come visit that. If you can't make it on that date, or if the council chooses to have a tabletop exercise at a later date, we can certainly accommodate that and put one together. Time for any questions or comments.
Any questions from the council?
Yeah, if I may start. The first question I have is, have you scheduled a time for that? Aren't a lot of those, don't they have deadlines on them? They have to be submitted by a certain time or you lose out on them.
Yes, a good majority of them do have deadlines on when you can submit your reimbursement or how long you're going to be submitting it for. It's also required to be very detailed. And recently, President Obama has, after the Superstorm Sandy, they had another legislation that came down that is trying to eliminate some of that red tape and make it easier for entities to get their resources back so they can continue on with their recovery. But as it stands right now, if I'm sure you've heard of all of the applying for a federal grant. Well, federal recovery is even worse than that, so it's much more in depth.
I recall in our exercise, that was one of the things that they emphasized, that you gotta meet those deadlines or you're just out of luck.
Yeah, and there are several local communities after the last earthquake that have experienced some difficulties in recovery and obviously have to meet with FEMA and straighten those out. But so finance is extremely important for those administration and finance officials to get their paperwork and numbers in order.
The only other question I have, and I see we have two gentlemen here from the fire department, the incident command system. I'm curious, is that the same system that the fire department currently uses? Because I know that whenever you have an incident, you establish an incident command system. Is it basically the same process? Do you know?
Yes, and the fire department, and they can correct me if I'm wrong, they operate very, for the most part, off of the SEMS model, which is the California model. And then that has ICS incorporated into it. But otherwise, that was based, the SEMS was created out of the big fire where there was a lot of loss of property and some life.
Okay, so our fire department, when we talk about incident command, they know what we're talking about. Get
yes,
a lot of help there, a lot of assistance.
Okay, thank
you.
Did you want to come forward? Did you have any further comments on that? Tell us who you are so the audience knows.
Ricky Heath, Five Cities Fire Authority. Commander Peters is correct in his statement about the incident command system. It's just on a typical day-to-day basis, we're operating in the incident command system more in the field level. So when he activates the ELC, you'll have management and
are having to do incident command.
Yes, ma'am.
Effectively.
We
yeah.
practice it as often as possible.
Thank you very much.
Yes, like Chief Heath said, the fire department gets a lot of opportunities to do incident command. The police department, not as much, but when we have crime scenes or major incidents going on, that's what we go right mm-hmm. into is the incident command system.
Yeah, I guess you have it day to day, too. You've got some critical decisions to make at every call.
Yes.
Yeah. Any other questions?
Sure. Just a couple. Thank you very much. This is interesting. So let's say we had some sort of incident. And it knocked down the cell towers of the telephone. What would be our obligation? I mean, obviously, we'd want to take care of our family at our homes first. And then do we run down here, or what are your expectations?
Well, the expectations would be that, obviously, take care of your family yourself first. Get anybody treated that needs to be through emergency services. But as soon as you're possible to come down to the EOC, that would be great. The EOC director has the ability to proclaim the disaster. Okay, the council has 7 days after the proclamation by the EOC director to ratify that. So you do have some time to get down, but mm-hmm. obviously there's going to be important things that are occurring immediately after the disaster that you're going to want to know about or at least have some knowledge about when you're making decisions later on.
Okay. So assuming the communication's out and Bob can't get in touch with me or whatever, I would try to take care of everything at home and then mosey down to see if I'm needed.
Yeah. Okay. And what Hurricane Katrina and Superstorm Sandy have proven is that cell phone service is not as reliable as we all think. It goes out pretty quickly.
Yes.
And when people are jamming the network, the only thing that seems to be working is the old two-way radio or ham radio systems.
Interesting. So... And then along those lines, you mentioned it, you've got, I forget the name of the person, but the person who has to act was, I'm sorry?
Are you talking about the press?
No, actually, this is the person who has to procure equipment. Oh.
Mm-hmm. Logistics.
The logistics. Yeah. So is there a mutual aid that you have with the other cities and the state and the county?
We do have mutual aid agreements in place that mm-hmm. if we need assistance, we can call the county. Obviously, we have our partners next to us, Royal Grand, Pismo Beach, and Oceano. The fire service and police service, we work came in after the Japan earthquake. And then in Emmitsburg, Maryland, part of the process was a tsunami that struck on the 4th of July, if you can imagine. So, and that was just the beginning.
It just went downhill from there.
It went really downhill.
Oh, my gosh.
So you're fairly comfortable with the exercises that you've had right now? I mean, obviously, it's a chance to work out the bugs, but...
Yes, I mean, obviously, it's a skill that you have to utilize, or if you don't, you're going to lose the aspects of it and be forgetful. But once you get right back into running an EOC operation, it's once you've been training it and you've used it a couple times, you pretty much remember what you're doing. But again, it's a disaster. You've got to be prepared for the unknown.
Good, and I think that was good advice to go to the www.
Yeah.
.ready.com.
.gov. Thank you. Yeah. That's all I had. Thank you.
Yeah. Yes, thank you. It was very interesting. Back to the what happens as a council. Would there be any need for a quorum to make any of these decisions?
You will need your quorum. So if you have, you're going to need your majority vote. If there's at least three of you present that can make those decisions. If for whatever reason that some council members cannot make it and you do not have your full five-person board, and if it appears that council members are going to be indisposed of or may not return because of the nature of the disaster, the council has the ability to appoint. And generally the practice has been in other cities that the council appoints former council members because of the time and the training they already have to know how to work with the council, and then to step into that role in that emergency. That's what has been done in other locations.
That's interesting. I asked that question because as my team at San Luis School District, they expect me to also be part of that emergency team. So I don't know where I would be, if I would be there or here. So I wondered.
You do have to remember the nature of the disaster may preclude up to 50% of your first responders not being available.
Exactly. So there is
not just council members, but police and fire may be tied up at home or can't get here.
So I was wondering what the plan would be if you did need a quorum, and you have that covered. So thank you.
Yeah. Question?
Just real quick, we do have many links on our website regarding emergency planning, and feel free to go and explore that. Not everything is on there because there are a lot of links, FEMA links on there, or CalEMA, or whatever they are now, CalOES. So there are a lot of links there. I'm not sure Ready is on there, but it might be something we can look and put on there. We have other aspects.
Or it's in one of the links, I'm sure.
And our specific plan is not on there because we're in the process of looking at updating that.
Okay. And then just had one other question. So the IS-100 and the IS-700 training, so is that something we coordinate through you to obtain or through the city manager? Or?
Sure. If you wanted to contact our office, you can either talk to myself or Chief Copsey. We can find out where the next training assignment is. CSTI up here in San Luis Obispo has a lot of emergency management training, and generally they'll have some of those classes yearly.
Great. Thank you.
Take it online.
You can take it online, actually. There is a tutorial. I think it's 4 hours now. It's a few hours online.
That's great.
That's less than traffic school.
So,
how would you know that?
Can you get the humorous version?
If you go to the FEMA website, and the NIMS actually has a link on there, and that will bring you right over to the training. So,
thank you.
I believe Chief Copsey had a few words for you.
Thanks. I just made a couple notes I wanted to touch on as we go. First of all, I want to thank John. John has actually done a good job of getting prepared and getting our city prepared for a lot of emergency management stuff. He's been attending a number of emergency management classes up at CSTI, which is out here by off Kansas, a local outfit that does a lot of emergency training. Very good program, and he's, I think, almost complete.
One more class,
and he'll be our guru for the city. But I did want to thank him for that, and I did want to mention on the training, I will get that out in the Friday letter for information exactly what those sites are, because you can do both of those classes online, and they're not too difficult, but you can do it at your home. I did want to emphasize that I believe our city's ready. for emergency, just about hopefully any emergency that happens, whether it's a train accident or a earthquake or a tsunami. We've practiced most of those. With the fire department, has participated with us a number of times. We train with, we use the nuclear power plant through PG&E to use some of their funds, as is why we use most of their process, because we jointly work with them on training, such as the one coming up in April. So we've had an opportunity to train a lot of different aspects and a different command structure on what goes on with logistics and stuff. There's a lot of questions that I'm sure you have. So you'll pick some of that if you go through that training. On the communication aspect, I know it's always what happens if we have a disaster and we can't use our cell phone. If you're like me, I don't have a phone at home. I use my cell phone, and I may or may not have communication initially. Obviously, as Commander Peters said, take care of yourself and your family. That is number one. And also, our EOC director, whoever that may be, please support him. You don't have to rush down here right away, because he'll probably be very, very busy if it's it's a disaster strong enough or an incident strong enough to where we have to activate our EOC. So there's plenty of time for council members to get their information. Like Glenn said, you don't have to rush down here. We have, or if it's that type of an incident, we will have activate our EOC. We will have taken care and be working on the situation. Your role is much more in the supportive aspect. I always like to say bring donuts and watch us work. But I think it's really important that you recognize a support role in supporting staff. And if Bill can remember back when the policy group, which is what your group, sits back and kind of gets information on regular briefings that the EOC director will set up, you'll get the information then, and then you'll establish policies if we need to establish policies, funding policies and whatnot, and media information that's really there. And then the second item I want to really mention, too, is supporting your community, because they're the ones that are impacted by this. And it's really important that there's a unified, like Commander Peters said, in supporting a message, but supporting, what's going on. How do we help the community in getting things going? So that's, and the last thing I wanted to say is, we have, just to let you know, there's been in the past a lot of talk about interoperability, how we communicate. Communication in every incident that I've been involved with is almost always an issue. In most of the incidents that happen back east, it's communication. This, we lose our cell phone, we have radios. We lose our radios, we have ham radios. There's a lot of different ways we communicate. Are they all the best? Probably not. Because there's always failures that can happen. But we have redundancies in just about everything that we have. Satellite phones or different aspects of the radio process. We now have capabilities with the command post. That's that big white ice cream truck out there that you see. Commander Peters has done a great job in setting that up. We have fire capacity in that fire. We have dispatch capabilities soon. And we can communicate.
Back at FEMA headquarters was that please follow up. Don't just forget that you've had this education, this training. Take it back to your communities and follow up with it. And I really appreciate the fact that you gentlemen have followed up and we are having this exercise. And I will suggest that, as in the report, if we want to have a tabletop exercise, I strongly recommend that we do. You get an awful lot out of it. Very important.
Do we have consensus on that?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. I had a few questions, but I also have an open for public comment, so I'm going to open really quickly. Is there anyone from the public who wanted to come forward? Okay, we'll bring it back. And I had a few questions. I know that you said we work with Oceano, who's the sheriff, and AG, and PISMO. What about state parks and the CHP? Do we coordinate with all the government agencies?
Yes, we do. Matter of fact, I was just in a meeting last week where I was meeting with Parks and CHP that were at the disaster planning or meeting up at the county level. So everybody is coordinating with one another, getting to know each other, and so they do have a table, if need be, in our EOC, or they're also at the county EOC as well, where they have tables and offices mm-hmm. there where they can respond.
Thank you. And then another question I had is, do we coordinate with Vandenberg?
Not currently in depth, because most of what Vandenberg does. It depends on what the nature of the emergency is going to be. But most military bases just generally shut down, and they go into a safe mode. But they do have some resources that I think they're probably going to be in the Lompoc, Santa Barbara area, and helping in that area. We have our resources up here in San Luis Obispo County, but we have a bomb squad or anything like that. As for what Vandenberg can bring to us in reference to anything additional, it would still have to be looked at based on the incident.
The reason I ask that is because I have a neighbor who's in the Air Force down at Vandenberg, and he asked me, had we ever considered, he's a hazmat specialist, and he asked if we'd ever considered that parts might fall off a rocket, or a rocket might fall out of the air. And were we, as a city, prepared for that? Because I guess we may be in the path. And I said, I don't recall us ever talking about that. And he's
in order for something like that to happen.
And his concern was more the toxic waste, was the fact that the benzene is toxic, and that could become an issue. And that was his big issue. So anyway, I know you guys have got it under control, and I thank you for that. Let's see, did I have any other questions? Oh, yeah. No, I think that's it. So I just wanted to mention a couple of things. I've been concerned about this for some time, so I'm thrilled that we've done it, and I feel so much better knowing that we really are under control as much as we can be. So thank you for that. And I wanted to mention a couple of things. One is maybe a question. I heard the Red Cross speak several years ago, and they mentioned that they have these go packs, and they're about $80, and you can order them online, and they have everything you might possibly want. You stick it somewhere where if there's an emergency, you grab it and you go. And so are those? Is that something you'd recommend as part of being prepared?
I would definitely recommend that you have a preparation pack, especially a first aid kit, anything that you can have, dehydrated food that you can activate later, any bottles of water. There are multitude of kits out there, especially after Katrina and Sandy. Many companies realized there was a need in this area, and they have developed it. I believe there's even local companies that have opened up here on the Central Coast in San Luis Obispo County that offer these packs. You can get online on the internet, and there's hundreds of companies that offer any kind of a pack for whatever you need.
Thank you.
And actually, if I could just add on to that real quick, is about a year ago, my family bought two of them from Miners. So they actually stock them locally. We put them into a corner.
Go to Miners.
Along with a case of water, and that should keep us hydrated and food fed for, I think it's 6 days.
Well, what we did was we bought one at $80, and then I gave it to my son and said, make a second one. So the $80 one's much nicer, I have to say. And then a couple of other things. One of the things that every year I take my son for his flu shots at the county, and every year they go, oh, we'll give you one too because you're a first responder. So just to let you guys know that if something happens, they don't want you to have the flu, so you can go along to the county and get a flu shot free. It's the only perk we get. And free flu shots. And I think actually that's all I had. Does anybody else have any other comments before we receive and file? No. Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks. It's first in the alphabet, so you get to go first again.
Well, I didn't have any committee meetings, so on to the next.
Okay. Next in the alphabet is Lee.
And I had a Visit San Luis Obispo County meeting. IW Integrated Waste Management is next week, but the Visit San Luis Obispo County, there was a presentation or more of a follow-up, and I believe if I saw in the Friday letter, we're going to hear from Executive Director Stacy Jacobs at the next meeting with regards to their plan for the outreach and the TBID, the Tourism Business Improvement District, and they've settled on a 1% TOT addition at this point. They figured that was the most that was the easiest way to calculate the amount coming in and so forth. But Ms. Jacobs will provide more information on that next week. And then also they are as an organization. The SLO International Film Festivals is this week, but then they're already planning for SAVOR, the Central Coast, mm-hmm. and basically the theme is what didn't work last year isn't going to be repeated. What worked last year is going to come back. and one of the things that they're actually going to do this year is even have earlier ticket sales in order to mm-hmm. continue to drum up the support and the opportunity for people to get tickets as soon as possible.
So great. Thank you. That's what I got. Great. Next we have M.
You
Glenn
didn't forget
Marshall.
Me.
Yeah.
So I had a meeting with South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District on Wednesday, February 19th. From the plant superintendent's report, they are continuing to work on the SCADA system. They met with Bartle Wells and Associates and Kennedy Jenks, they being staff, the district staff, and they discussed some process options and planning timeframes and cost projections for upcoming capital improvement projects. And they anticipate rate adjustment discussions later this year based on the recommendations they'll be bringing forward later on. They also, the brine disposal, I think I mentioned that it went up from a penny to 11 cents. And as of February 11th, they received $8,900 in revenues from that.
Good.
Yeah. And we also reviewed the adopted investment policy, which we need to review each year. And they updated it to conform with some new government codes. But other than that, there were no changes to the investment strategy. I've got recommending to approve some grant applications. I think it's for veterans, I believe, for both of them.
Can I ask a question about that?
Please.
Because you also have the APCD on Wednesday night, and we also have – oh, no.
Oh, I'm sorry. I do have a conflict, not with APCD, but with South Sanitation.
Excuse me, South San. I get the – yeah.
Yeah, I will be late to our Wednesday meeting. Mm-hmm. It starts at 6. I suspect it will go till at least 7. So I should be here sometime after 7 on Wednesday for a workshop on the charter.
The workshop.
It's a council. Workshop.
The workshop.
Mm-hmm. It's a public workshop.
So public workshop.
May
right.
I ask a question about,
I'm done.
I'll ask that later.
Well, that's okay. We're kind of on committees. If it's about the workshop, that's fine.
And actually, before we jump to that, if you don't mind, just a quick reference. I have a conflict on Wednesday for the HSOC as well, so neither the member nor the representative or the alternate will be there. So, Chief, you're it.
The assistant city manager.
Right.
Good.
No. I'm wondering, I kind of got the impression that you said it's not a council meeting,
right.
So you don't want us here. Is that kind of the deal? Or we're not?
It's a public meeting. Obviously, if there's more than three of you, it presents a problem because then we end up with a Brown Act.
I won't be here.
No. The purpose of the meeting is primarily a public meeting and is to review the draft with those present and then solicit comments. Now, what we intend to do with that is to then take the draft, and it's not going to be changed as a result of the workshop, it'll be just as it is, and then return with the comments that are made to the council probably in early April, and then it'll be up to the council to take the next step.
So I'm really glad you asked that because there are two schools of thought there. One school of thought is don't intimidate people by being there. The other school of thought is why didn't you show up? Doesn't it matter? So what's the right thing to do there?
From a legal standpoint, as city manager identified, if the three of you are there, then none of you can play. You can sit and observe, but basically that's about it. It's not a noticed meeting. I think that it is staff's intent to explain to those who will be there that this is not a council meeting, this is not designed for council participation, but it's designed for them, the public, to basically provide staff with comments on the draft, maybe have some questions and discussion. And then you will have the opportunity to work with the charter.
I don't have to be there, so.
I will most likely come.
Okay.
Yeah, I plan on being there as well, but only as a non-participant. So
I'm just here to observe.
Observe.
And I had agendized it, and I can go either way. So, but that's just three of us anyway. So unless you wanted to,
I'm okay. Fine. I hadn't planned to.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Great. Good. Say, wait a minute. Three of
three
us
is
a, we can't
three
do
is
that.
Three is a good number. Yeah.
Okay,
three
I won't go.
There you go.
I'll go to the movies. Okay.
Great. What shall we see?
Oh, well, I'll email you. There's a good one on at the Fair Oaks. All right. I'm sorry, Glenn, we kind of hijacked your...
Sorry.
No, that's fine. That was okay. I'm done.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Thank you. And then Bill Nichols is next.
I have no report.
Okay. So that leaves it to me. And the only one I had was the Economic Vitality Corporation. San Luis Obispo Council of Governments is not meeting Wednesday morning, although they generally meet the first Wednesday of the month. But the San Luis Obispo Regional Transit Authority is meeting, so I will do that meeting on Wednesday. But I wanted to tell you about a few things that are going on with the Economic Vitality Corporation that are exciting to me. They have one of the things that's starting up, and it is a tri-county online community, and they're calling it 805 Connect. And it's a resource for people in our three counties, Santa Barbara, Ventura, and San Luis Obispo, for business-to-business commerce, collaborations, more addresses, listings, that kind of thing, so we can connect better. And one of the things that got them involved is that one of San Luis Obispo's most successful manufacturers had been looking to source some materials and was online and realized later that the material provider was in the building next door. So the business community is thinking that might be, you know, we've gone to the internet now and we forget about knocking on the door of our next door neighbor. So they're going to be launching that in coming months. On the airport, I know lots of us have been very excited about bringing in another airline. They did meet on December 2nd in Chicago with United Airlines. And overall, the numbers from our region is extremely positive. They have a dilemma in that new federal regulations are increasing the rest periods for pilots, and so that means there's probably going to be a shortage of pilot activity, especially on new routes. So the only way they can... So that's the update on the airport. The other update, something that's kind of exciting, there is an action plan proposal to the California Public Utilities Commission from a new consortium of about 200 businesses and public agencies called the Broadband Consortium Pacific Coast. And their purpose, and they are seeking grant aid, but they're going to do it whether or not they get that. Their purpose is to have the tri-counties collaborate, government, economic development, education, health, business, not-for-profit organizations, in order to identify and implement measures that best achieve the advancement and expansion of regional broadband technology across the tri-counties. So thinking that if we're collaborating on that, that we'll have much more effective use of it for economic development. And so their goal is to map the region's current broadband assets, identify requirements and opportunities, and then put those in a database that's accessible. And they also want to enable broadband to be an economic catalyst and create an infrastructure that supports the adoption of technology solutions so we can create new jobs and finally address and resolve issues of disproportionality and increase access to broadband among underserved and low-income communities. Sounds an awful lot like what we're doing with our broadband. But what even sounds more like what we're doing with our broadband is that they've identified this term that they call, let me see if I can find it here, dig once. Now, you'll probably get what that is, because whenever what they're saying is, if you dig a hole in the ground, throw in the fiber optic. Well, we've been doing our dig once for 5 or 6 years now, maybe longer. But I thought that reminding ourselves of the dig once is something that we might really want to look at a little bit more as a city, because I know I'd mentioned when we were talking about electricity, and it's been a goal of the city for years to underground those lines, and we never can. But I think maybe we can start bothering John Scholes about this a little bit. And I think we ought to really seriously look at that as it relates to undergrounding and street repairs too. So dig once. I like that. I like that terminology. And that was all. So we're moving now to council communications. Did anybody have any communications? No? I wanted to mention a couple of things. One is I did meet with our new coastal commissioner, Eric Howell, last week, and we will meet again. It was more of a social meeting because a lot of that, and you should be hearing about that. And And then I think city manager's going, are you going to talk with us about the April clean sweep day?
Well, I certainly can.
Okay.
Briefly when I
okay.
when you get to me.
Well, we've got to you.
Okay. First of all, the regarding clean sweep day, the Parks and Rec Commission, you may have noticed in the Friday letter, has agreed to take on the responsibility of organizing a community service day, more or less to replace our Grover Beautiful, get more volunteers and more people involved. There's going to be a planning meeting, if anyone's interested in attending, that'll actually be next Monday, the 10th, at 6 o'clock here at City Hall in the conference room. And they're looking to expand their committee. Speaking of the Parks and Rec Commission, obviously the other item you have in front of you is a request for a joint meeting on the 13th of this month. Hopefully that's a date that you can all meet. The Rec and Park Commission is very anxious to sit down with you. And I think the council has expressed an interest in meeting with them as well. So I would expect if the council would like to schedule that meeting, probably figure about an hour and a half, and that would be a workshop-style meeting, again, where it's just an interchange of information and no actual decisions would be made.
I had a question about the meeting for clean sweep. In the Friday letter, it said that they were looking for council participation.
Right.
Was that at the event or on the committee?
On the committee.
Okay.
And you know, I'm not looking, and it's not agendized mm-hmm. for anybody to
right.
make an appointment. It's mm-hmm. just if someone has an interest, they mm-hmm. might want to join up and attend that meeting.
Okay. And how is that? Does that joint meeting work for folks on the 13th? Yeah, six o'clock, wasn't
yep.
it? Oh, 6:30. Okay.
6:30.
Right. So we do need a voice vote on that one. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, that's unanimous. And then city attorney, I believe you have some city council in its capacity as a successor agency to the dissolved Grover Beach Improvement Agency.
Actually, that's a title for your closed session. You
will
be meeting in closed session as the successor agency.
Very good. Well, I just announced it. Okay. We
and
are going
on,
to...
on one item,
okay.
potential case for litigation.
Okay, so it's 8:02. We'll recess to closed session. We'll come and report back when we're done.